Hi there, everyone. Welcome to the Experiential Table Podcast. I'm Cynthia Simonian, your host and founder of Hidden Rhythm. I'm also the creator of Cooking Class Business School, where I help culinary pros create and market profitable online cooking classes. Now, if you've been listening for a while, then you know that I usually interview culinary pros who teach online cooking classes. But today I am mixing things up and talking with a peer of mine who also helps culinary pros grow their businesses. When I discovered Evelyn Williams, aka Chef Evelyn, I was so thrilled to find someone else who is just as dedicated to serving culinary pros in their entrepreneurial journey. Evelyn is the founder and CEO of Flavor Enterprises, a culinary edutainment and lifestyle company. In this episode, we're going to chat about Evelyn's specialty, how to build a high-end culinary brand with multiple streams of income. If you like the sound of living, cooking, and working on your terms, I mean, who doesn't, right? Then this episode is definitely for you. Hi, Evelyn. Welcome to the Experiential Table.
Hi, Cynthia. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. Now, before we dive into all the juicy details of building a high-end culinary brand, I want to give our listeners a brief intro to your background and experience. Now, Chef Evelyn is a former chemical and environmental engineer, that's right, who eventually swapped her lab coat for a chef's coat and spent over a decade in various chef, instructor, and curriculum developer roles. After making the decision to follow her passion and pursue culinary entrepreneurship full-time, she landed work with celebrity clients, including Giada De Laurentiis and Sheryl Crow, and ran an award-winning cooking school. Today, Evelyn spends the majority of her time as a culinary brand strategist, where she helps her students build solid foundations that develop profitable and sustainable culinary businesses and generate multiple streams of income to scale and expand their culinary business empires. That's right. We said empires. I can't wait to talk more about this with you, Evelyn. So before we dive into that high-end culinary brand concept that you have coined and developed, I want to ask you this, and I'm sure you get this question all the time. How did you go from being a chemical engineer to a chef working with big name celebrities?
I wish it was a straight line of a story, but basically, both my parents were engineers, and, you know, all the people that they had around me growing up were, you know, engineers or in some kind of STEM field for the most part. And I actually never thought about being a chef as a career. I came from a family where everyone could cook. And so I thought that was normal. I thought, you know, there's some families where everyone can sing or everyone is an artist. And so you just think that that's something that every family does. And it wasn't until I was in my fourth of 5 years of college, because I double majored, and I was in a class called Thermodynamics 2. And I remember sitting there, and it felt like every other student was on the edge of their seats, and they were so excited to learn about saturated steam tables. And all I was thinking was, I'd rather be in the kitchen making some brownies. So I called my parents and I said, you know what, I think I want to go to culinary school. And they were like, we support you. We think that's amazing, but you're going to finish this engineering degree first. And did we mention that we're not paying for culinary school? So
right. That's
kind of the short version of the story. So I went to work in corporate America. Obviously, I graduated, went to work for like a Fortune 50 company. And then after several years, the itch to go to culinary school wouldn't leave. And so I was just like, you know what? It's time to go. I enrolled, and kind of the rest is history.
Wow. I can relate to that story you had about sitting in that class and wondering, like, all these people are interested in this topic, and I really could not care less. I mean, I didn't make it as far as you did in the sciences, but I was pre-med, and I remember it was organic chemistry that broke me, like a lot of others. I mean, organic chemistry was created to weed people out like me. And I remember looking around saying, these people love what the professor is talking about. And I just couldn't wait to get out and ended up switching to business. So there you go.
There you go.
All right. So you went to culinary school. And then what was your path after that?
So what's interesting is I went to culinary school, and I knew going in that I didn't want to be an employee. And so upon graduation, I knew I didn't want to go the traditional route of working in a restaurant or a hotel. But the only thing I really could find available to me as an option was either being like a traditional personal chef or starting a catering company. So I kind of started there. You know, I was catering different events here and there. I had some personal chef clients, you know, that I had on a biweekly basis. And it didn't feel the way I thought being a chef was going to feel. It wasn't scratching that itch that I had way back in that Thermodynamics 2 class. And so I started playing around with, you know, looking at different industries and seeing what they were doing with their creative skill set. And I remember I was being mentored by this couple who was into, back then it was called internet marketing, right? And yeah. So I was traveling around with them and I was watching them do these workshops, and they were doing this thing called affiliate marketing at the time, and they were making all this money. And I was like, how can I take this, what they're doing, and apply that to the culinary field? And so that's when I started down like the cooking class route. So I did my first online cooking class in 2010 before Instagram.
Before Instagram, obviously yeah. Long before COVID. I have to ask you more about that. I'd love to hear how that experience was and how it changed. But first, I do want to dig deeper into something that you mentioned, was that you knew early on that you didn't want to be an employee.
Yeah.
Have you always been an entrepreneur at heart, or was that something that evolved over time?
You know, for me, I think it was a little bit of both. I started my first food business at 15, not intentionally. I started selling cakes. I have a whole story about how my grandmother was an amazing cook, but she couldn't bake to save her life. And so I made my own birthday cake one year, and then I started selling it. And I always had something on the side that was generating revenue from a food perspective, even when I was working in corporate America as an engineer. But I think that that experience in corporate, my internships, things like that, let me know that I think corporate America is great for people who it's great for, and it wasn't great for me. I found myself wanting a lot more control over my time, a lot more control over my income potential, and at the rate that I wanted to increase. And so once I realized that there were kind of these set parameters, like, oh, you have to stay in this role for 18 months and this and that, I think over time, I just was like, I don't really know if this is the best fit for my personality style. So I think it was a combination of both, starting that food business at 15 and knowing that I had the skill that could generate income, but then also working in corporate and understanding what it takes to be successful in that environment and realizing that I didn't want to do what it took to be successful in that environment.
Right. Absolutely. So you had some mentorship, got to see a little bit behind the scenes, like you said, back when it was called internet marketing, which yes. We're both laughing at now. But then when did you actually take the leap full time into culinary entrepreneurship and diving into that more? When did you step away from corporate America?
In 2009, July to be exact. And I remember going to my boss and saying, hey, I'm putting in my notice because I'm in culinary school. So I quit while I was still in culinary school, but I had already started my business while I was in culinary school. So I had been in culinary school for a year and a half while still working and traveling for my job like 90% of the time. And so when I went to turn in my notice, my boss didn't believe me. He was like, there's no way you've been traveling for work the way you have, and you've been in culinary school this full time. And I was like, actually, I have.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, this is an online culinary school. Like, how are you making that happen?
Insanity. Literally would get up, go to work Monday morning, and then I was doing like a Clark Kent Superman kind of thing. Like I would take my clothes, my culinary uniform to work, change clothes at the culinary school, go to class 5 to 10, okay, for a lab, get up Tuesday morning, catch a flight to whatever facility I was going to audit, be there Tuesday, Wednesday, fly back Thursday morning, change clothes in the airport to go to culinary school Thursday evening, work all day Friday, and then go to culinary school Friday night.
Wow. I bet the people at the airport started to know you really well. They're like, yeah, there she is. There she is.
Yes, it was crazy. It's a bit of a blur.
So your boss didn't believe you?
No, at all.
So you were building your business on the side. When you quit, were you in a place where you were like, okay, I can replace my corporate income tomorrow, I've got it all figured out? Or were you like, jump first, figure it out later? What was your approach?
Oh, I definitely was jump first, figure out later, which I don't know if I would recommend to people. I mean, I think it depends on your personality style and then also like your living arrangements and things like that. But I definitely did not immediately come out and replace my engineering income. I had had some reserves, but it was like, okay, I'm going to finish culinary school and I'm going to work this business on the side, because I got into a point where I couldn't take any more classes without leaving my job. So I definitely jumped first. But, you know, I think the thing that some people forget to tell people when you jump off that cliff, you know, with no safety net, is you might get scraped up a little bit along the way down the mountainside, but you'll recover.
Exactly. And you raise a really good point about it being somewhat dependent on your personality. I know that I'm totally okay taking risks. I'm not a risk averse person, but there are people who are. And that doesn't mean don't do it until you think you're ready, because I'm sure you'd agree with me that if you wait until you're ready, it'll never happen.
Yeah, ready is a mythical place. Like, it doesn't exist.
Ready does not exist. So it's a little bit of a delicate balance, but it seems like you were able to kind of figure out what made sense for you and move forward. And so what was that culinary side business that you had at the time that you were going to pursue, or did it evolve shortly after leaving your job?
It was catering and personal chefing, and very traditional personal chefing, like going into someone's house while they're at work or away, you know, cooking their meals for 2 weeks, freezing them, and then coming back in 2 weeks. And then also I was doing like catering. I always considered myself a freelance chef, like anything that came my way at that time. I was like, sure, I can do it, which is actually crazy making when I look back on it. But it was a mixture of things. And then it kind of evolved into more of like dinner parties and special occasion events where I knew that catering wasn't for me, particularly not in the Texas heat in the summer, carrying around hot boxes in 112 degree weather. I knew that that wasn't for me. And so the cooking classes came around 2010, in person and online. So that's where that started. And then I was also doing the small dinner parties. And that's where I kind of lived for a while.
Okay. And let's talk about the online cooking class space in 2010. So where were you teaching them online? Who were these people signing up? How did they hear about you? Like, help us think about it, because everyone listening knows what it looks like today, but I don't think many were thinking about teaching online or taking online cooking classes back over 10 years ago.
Right. And you have to think also, even courses weren't a thing. Online courses wasn't a big thing, right? So I maybe had a website.
A MySpace page.
You know what I mean? So what's interesting is there was this thing called Google Hangouts, and I taught my classes. Well, the first class was pre-recorded, so it was actually more like a course. The first time it was called Spice Up Your Life, and it was all about learning how to cook with spices. And what was crazy is I literally put up an event on Facebook when that was an easy thing to do. And I invited people in my contacts list. And like before I finished creating the class, I had made $500.
Wow.
And I was like, so this is the thing.
But what made you think to even teach an online cooking class when you probably could have stayed very busy doing in-person events and classes?
So I think it's my analytical mind. I started doing the math. And then, like I said, also I was traveling around with this couple who was doing, like I said, the internet and affiliate marketing. And they were selling their online program. And I was like, I want to work from home. And I remember thinking, well, Evelyn, this is an oxymoron. You can't be a chef that works from home. There's no such thing. But I asked myself a different question. I said, well, what would it take to work from home and also be a chef? And so I knew that people were making money online. And I thought to myself, oh, well, the only skill that I have to offer for profit that I think somebody would buy is to teach them how to cook, right? Since I'm now a professional chef. And so I just took a risk and said, okay, I'm going to make it work. And I kind of MacGyvered it together because there wasn't course platforms back then. There wasn't all these different live streaming apps and things like that. And so I did a pre-recorded course, and I needed to ask myself a different question, which was, I didn't say, well, I've never seen it, I can't do it. I just said, how can I? But again, that goes back to me. I was looking at different industries and I saw that other people were doing different things. And I was like, why can't I bring this to food, even though I hadn't seen it?
How will it happen? That's so valuable for our listeners to hear. So you did that. Fast forward to where you are today. Maybe you can share with our listeners what your business is now, because it is different. It certainly has evolved. And then we can talk about this term, high-end culinary brand, which you speak quite a lot about in your YouTube videos and other content. And that is specifically what I'm very excited to learn more about myself.
So, I mean, my business now is primarily coaching and consulting other chefs on very non-traditional ways to generate revenue with their skill set. I think there is a lot of people similar to you and I who went down a path of a more traditional career, made the switch to culinary, but, you know, very similar to your question earlier, where the options for replacing or matching or exceeding our income were few and far between. I knew that going to working in a hotel for 70, 80 hours a week was not going to match my engineering lifestyle. I knew that starting off as a line cook or a prep cook was not going to be conducive to the way that I wanted to live, coming from, like, I had already spent all this money, you know, going to engineering school and working in corporate and having the business travel account. So I was just like, I want to keep this lifestyle, but I also want to generate this kind of revenue. And so I figured if I existed, that other people existed. And the way I actually got started is I actually had people reaching out to me, watching me do what I was doing and say, hey, can you teach me that? The twist in that story was is they weren't chefs or culinary pros. They were completely outside of my industry. And people were like, can you send me an invoice and teach me to do what you do? That's when I started coaching. And then I decided to focus back on basically who I had been several years prior.
Oh, that's so interesting. I always thought you were working with culinary professionals the whole time, but what you're saying, people reached out to you from other industries and said, hey, Chef Evelyn, I love how you've done what created your online courses. Was that the thing that they wanted the most?
They were like, how did you take something that these two impossible worlds, almost like food is very labor intensive, hands-on, demanding, and you're at home. What happened? Like, how did you do that? And here's the thing. I wasn't even creating content around business at all. I was just marketing my chef services and chef business. And so, yeah, I had people reach out, whether they were just followers because they enjoyed food or whatever, and they were entrepreneurs and wanted to do that. So I would say my first handful of clients were in completely unrelated fields.
But you still took them and you coached them. Yeah. Yeah. And then you had a moment where you're like, I want to go back to my food people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who is the type of person that works with you today? What does that person look like? What are their goals? What's their background generally?
I would say there's about three categories of people that work with me. One is obviously people who have a very similar story to mine. They're currently in corporate America. Maybe they've gone to culinary school, or they're thinking about going to culinary school and they want to make the switch, but they're not sure what options are available to them. They've seen catering and they're like, okay, I've been there, done that, or I don't want to do that. They've seen personal chefing and they're like, that's great. But, you know, once you fill up your client load, your income might be potentially capped. So that's probably the main person that works with me. I also get people who have been in the industry a long time who are ready to move out of whatever they were doing into something more online. So that's probably the second category. So whether they were a career changer and then they did have a catering company, or they were working in restaurants and hotels and they've got, you know, amazing experience. I have a former client where his career was on yachts. He was a private chef on yachts and traveled the world for 20 years.
Wow.
And he's like, I'm ready to, it sounds glamorous, but he was like, I have a wife and children. I want to be at home with my family. So people who are looking more for quality of life and work-life balance, who are looking to monetize online and at a higher price point, that's probably the second category. And then the third category is probably those who want to more consult from a culinary standpoint. You know, I have several clients who are like nurses who have made the switch to culinary and they want to integrate their health and wellness knowledge with their passion for food. And they want to do really specific cooking classes or cooking coaching for those who may want to support their healing journey with a healthier lifestyle. So kind of three categories, but the goal is the same. People who want more control of their time, better work-life balance. They want a certain level of income, lifestyle, and want to do something different.
Right. And that's what really stood out. So I found you because I was just sleuthing on the internet. And I don't remember how I stumbled across your site, but I did. And once I did, I like went down the rabbit hole. The thing that stood out for me, and it's on your homepage, which we'll share later, but this phrase that you had, which was basically about living, cooking, and working on your terms. Did I get that right?
Yes.
And that resonated a lot with me because that's what I see my students wanting. It's to take back the control and to have some freedom. And like you mentioned with your story and what you've seen, is that this idea of working in hospitality or the culinary field is at odds with all of those things like your mental health, your financial health, your physical health, right? And there's always this push-pull dynamic. It's like, well, how can you have all of those things at the same time? And what I love is that you think about that holistic vision for your clients. It isn't just like, go make the most money you can, but it's like, let's think about how to do all of those things in a way that supports a great lifestyle.
Yes.
Which is different for everyone, right? Like each person yes. defines that differently. So let's talk about high-end culinary brands.
My favorite.
What are they? Yeah. I don't know if we want to use an acronym to save some words. I like to say high-end culinary brand. It sounds very, very sleek, but let's talk about it. What is this thing?
So a high-end culinary brand, I mean, I wish I could condense it into one sentence, but it's basically a brand that is built around the way you want to live first with multiple streams of income with a premium price point. And because my solution to that problem of wanting to have, like you said, a healthy work-life balance, but also like a healthy financial life, was I realized that in order for me to be successful with this skill set that traditionally was considered blue collar, if people even still use that phrase, was that I was going to have to charge premium prices, or I was going to have to work a lot. And that wasn't an option. So a high-end culinary brand takes all of your passions, all of your skills, and puts them into one pot to produce this very unique dish to you. I mean, we're food pros, so I'm going to use food metaphors.
Yes,
but this very unique one-of-a-kind dish to you that you also can charge a premium for. And the reason you can charge a premium for is because nobody else has it but you.
Got it. So what is the difference between that and saying that they have just a standard culinary brand or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest difference is that you're not selling a service. You're not selling a skill set. You're selling an experience. And it doesn't even matter if that's a product-based business, if that is an education consulting-based food business, if it's a class-based business, if it is a traditional service-based, that the way I help my clients package up their expertise is to position it as an experience. And that is the biggest difference. I think when people hear high-end culinary brand, they think that the biggest distinction is the price point. And that comes at the end. You know, you can't just stick a higher price tag on something and say, okay, because I'm charging more than, you know, the chef down the street, I now have a high-end culinary brand. That's not it at all. And it's very specialized. So they aren't generalists. So all of my clients are specialists in what they do. And so because they're specialists, they can charge. It's like a doctor. You've got your general practitioners and then you have your specialists. And we all know that when your general practitioner refers you to the specialist, you already know that you're going to pay more when you go like to that specialist.
You have to call up your insurance company just to make sure we're okay.
Exactly. And so I help them identify what their specialty is, package that specialty into the right products and services for the lifestyle that they want to have, position themselves in the marketplace with that specialty, and then price accordingly.
Wow. And that's not just an overnight process, right?
No, it's not.
I mean, what are the first few steps in doing that? I mean, I'm sure you work with your clients over a long period of time, but where does one even begin to think about creating a high-end culinary brand, taking what they have today and making it?
Yeah, I mean, the first step I usually do is we sit down, and I believe in a life first, business second approach to life. And so we get really clear about how they want to work and how they want to live. For example, if you want, let's say you are a mom and you have children and you have a husband and you don't want to be on the road all the time speaking or hosting events, then we're not going to build that into your model. But if you say, I love the travel and I don't want to be at home all the time and I want to be out mixing and mingling with the people, then we build that into the model. So the first step is we get really clear on what their ideal life looks like. And then we match that up with the revenue streams that can thrive within those parameters.
Got it. And I mean, I get this a lot with students in cooking classes in school who come in, and the first thing that we talk about is really defining your niche and how, in fact, your niche isn't something that you need to survey the market for. Like, this is something that you have inside, right? Like, if you ask yourself tough, honest questions and think about if you weren't scared, like, who would you really want to serve or what would you really want to offer? The answer is in there. But the challenge that I get from students and one of the concerns is, but other people are doing that, right? Everyone is doing vegan, fill in the blank. Like, how can I set myself apart? So how do you help your clients with that when they're creating a high-end culinary brand? And they're like, well, Chef Evelyn, I'm not the only person doing gluten-free desserts. Like, how do I actually charge more and command a premium.
Yeah. So I take them through, and I think this is probably where we're similar. You call it a niche. I call it their culinary point of view. And their culinary point of view is basically, like you said, what's their philosophy on food and their approach to food? So it's not just what they do, it's why they do it and who they do it for. And usually with those three pieces of data, there's not somebody else that's doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. I think the why, I mean, that's the golden nugget. And that's something where, you know, you probably do this where you have to ask them why 10 times, right? Because the first answer might be, because I love helping people.
And you're like, that's great.
Yeah. Because I love food. It's like, yeah. So does everyone.
So do we all.
Right. So that definitely makes sense. And we kind of skip past this, but where did this concept come from? Did it take time for it to evolve in your head, this idea of a high-end culinary brand? Is this something that you looked at other industries and modeled it after? Like, we didn't even talk about how you came up with it, really.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is probably one of the few things that I didn't get from other industries, but I do remember when I was still doing like dinner parties and personal chefing and small event catering, I just remember thinking this is a lot of work. And I remember my first kind of line in the sand was, I'm not leaving the house unless I'm going to profit $1,000. So that was the first like enough is enough for Evelyn kind of thing. And I remember I just kind of said, you know, I'm exhausted. Yes, I'm being an entrepreneur, but it feels more like I'm being an employee with no days off. I just said, you know what? If I'm not going to net $1,000, I'm not even going to do it. That was kind of the first step. And so from that moment, at that time, I ended up only attracting people where I at least made $1,000. I was like, if I'm going to leave my house, I want to make $1,000. And then over time, I just kept bumping up the number. Where the concept, not the name, but where the concept came from was I hired a coach, a mentor, a consultant, and she showed me that all of my clients had been either celebrities or high net worth individuals. And I didn't even realize it. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, that's so interesting. And she said, if you can dig deep and understand what you've been doing, that you only seem to draw this level of clientele, and teach that, you know, that'll be a completely new business for you. And I remember going, okay. And so I really sat down and I said, I wonder why, you know, I have had these celebrated clients or high net worth individuals who would refer me, come back to me, make special requests, things like that. And so it took some time to distill that down, like what I was doing intuitively, and then putting that together in a process that people could walk through that I knew could be duplicated. But that's where the idea came from. It was, I just got tired of working a lot for a little. And I incrementally kept saying, if it's not going to be X amount, then I'm not going to do it. And then it just went from there, and having that coach say, teach that.
Even coaches need coaches, right?
Yes. I still have coaches. Yes.
I have one too. And it continues to pay off. I feel like the minute you stop surrounding yourself with others who know more than you, or who at least have a different perspective, you stop growing, and then your students stop growing, or your clients, right? Because that's something that I'm sure you're passing down directly or indirectly. It's just that mindset and that approach that they're probably benefiting from just being in your aura.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's say that we have someone listening right now who is scraping by. They're catering right now as we're recording this. You know, more people are getting vaccinated. Hopefully live events are back. So, you know, maybe this person has explored teaching online, but now they are just swamped with upcoming events and they're looking at their calendar saying, oh my gosh, I am spending a lot of time working my tail off and there's a cap to my income. I can only make this much right now this season with catering. I want to build a high-end culinary brand. What would you give them as your number one piece of advice?
Increase their prices out the gate.
There you go. Everyone write that down. Chef Evelyn said it. Increase your prices.
Increase your prices. And that's more mental than anything. You can actually increase your prices and not change anything in your business. And that will alleviate and give you a little bit more bandwidth.
So what happens when you increase your prices? Does it attract higher value client, or why do you say that?
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. When you increase your prices, the type of clientele that you draw is different. Okay. And I say this cautiously, that they seem to be easier to work with. Not to say that people who pay or invest less are difficult. It's just that these clients seem to be easier. when I went to higher prices, I no longer had to do deposits. People just paid in full. I no longer had people trying to walk through the invoice and nitpick it apart. They just paid it. They didn't have any questions. I got to the point where people were tipping me the same amount as the invoice.
Oh, hello.
Hello. You know, it was, I'm booking you for this. And then I'm telling my parents and then I'm telling my friends. And then we're also going to bring you back in 90 days. And like, it just became easier from a working with them standpoint. There was a lot less back and forth, a lot less menu changes. It just became a lot less of a headache. And I was like, oh, I love it here. You know how like, there's that phrase going around, like, I hate it here. Like, I was like, oh, I love it over here.
This feels good.
Very generous. Yeah. They were very generous also. So you draw a different type of clientele. And they're not trying to get the sun and the moon and the stars for a penny, right? They're hiring you for your specific thing because they know what they want. They're very clear about it. And they're not trying to, you know, to get everything under the sun for a low price. And it just gives you breathing room.
Yeah. And I think as food people, we give, right? That's the love language. And so sometimes, you know, I have students who would give, like you said, the sun and the moon and the stars because they love what they do. They love their craft. But from a business perspective, it's really hurting them. They're spending too many hours delivering something that at the end of the day is leaving them totally dry. So increasing your prices, I love that. I mean, this sounds like a perfect thing for everyone. Like, who doesn't want to have a high-end culinary brand? But I am willing to bet that it's not for everyone. And my guess is you probably have some criteria for that, right?
Yeah. So
who is this not for? Who does this not actually make sense for?
So here's the thing, and I talk about this in my videos, you do not have to have a high-end culinary brand to be successful. And I relate it to, if you think about that, there's McDonald's and they are a $1 billion brand. And then you have five-star Michelin restaurants who are also very successful and everything in between. And so it really is about what you want. You know, if you want to be a Walmart version, which is a $1 billion company, there's no shame in that because that's a $1 billion brand, mm-hmm. right? But you just have to know that for each level, whether you're, you know, fast food, fast casual, I'm using those brand levels as an example, you know, neighborhood restaurant, chef owned, five star or Michelin, right? Each one of those have a different business model. That's when it goes back to how do you want to live and work? I didn't want to do volume. I didn't want to have 100, 200 clients or, you know, I've got to sell 500 cupcakes this week in order to meet my sales goal.
That's the Walmart model, right?
Right.
But high volume.
Who are amazing at that. And so that's a good model for them. Mm-hmm. So I think it goes down to preference. And the other thing that I always tell my clients is that, and this, some people may say this is woo-woo, but it's like the money mindset.
Yes.
That if you yourself, if you don't appreciate luxury, if you are not a consumer of luxury, then it's going to be challenging to sell luxury because you don't know the language of a luxury buyer or a high-end buyer. You may not understand why they're willing to pay more for a service or a product or an experience that someone else is offering at a lower price. And so you can learn that, but if you have some resistance to that, then being that person is going to be challenging. You know, I tell people sell hamburgers all the time for $3, and then some people sell it for 30, and then some people can sell it for 100, and it's all a hamburger. At the end of the day, the person is going to be satisfied because they have the craving for a hamburger satisfied. What is the difference between the person who wants to pay $3 for a hamburger and the person that's willing to pay $100?
Yeah.
And if you know that, if you understand, if you're the person that's like, I'm not saying I'd buy a $100 hamburger every day, but I'd buy one, then you might be a good candidate for a high-end culinary brand. If you see a $100 hamburger and you go, that is ridiculous, and I don't see why anybody would ever do that, that doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. That just means that may not be the brand level for you because you don't see the value in that.
Right. And you'll be spending all of your effort trying to rationalize your price, right? Mm-hmm. You won't believe in it. And that comes through. I know you know this, but if you aren't confident in your service and your price and anything that comprises your offer, it is obvious. People can see right through that. And of course, you're never going to feel perfectly confident, especially in the beginning, but you have to get behind it, at least fake it for like mm-hmm. a little while, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it takes work. You know, I had a client inquiry the other day and I had a woman when we were on our consultation call, and this is not for coaching. This is for me to do like a private virtual event for them. And she was like, you know, Chef Evelyn, what I'm asking you is to change your service. And this is where confidence comes in, because I looked at her through the Zoom and I said, and what I'm saying to you is I'm not going to do that.
Ooh, I love that. Yes. Right? Yes.
Because I know what I do and I know what I don't do. I'm very clear about what my specialty is.
That's fantastic. I hope everyone heard that, because sometimes we feel like we have to bend and be malleable to what the client wants because they're paying. But right. if you do that for every single client, unless they are paying the right price and it's aligned with what you want to teach or do, then no, it's a no.
It's a no.
I love that you had to point out that it was a Zoom video call. You looked yes. at her right through the, did you look at the camera? Did you like look yes. at her directly?
I did.
All right. So I have another question for you. And then I can't believe it. Our time is running out here together.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And you're busy. So I know you got to get back to it. But another question I have for you is, you know, you've seen a lot of people come to you and, you know, work with you on coaching. And you've also just seen, I think, a lot of your peers in the culinary space try and fail, try and succeed. So my question for you is, what are some of the biggest mistakes or missteps you see culinary pros making when they try to grow their brand?
Oh man, how much time do we have?
is that an episode number two?
Possibly, but I'll try to condense it to two or three things. I would say the biggest mistake is that they try to remain the technician. And what I mean by that is, I read a book several years ago, and I wish that I could give this author credit if I could remember the name of the book. But so this is not an Evelyn original, but in the book, it talked about that in any entrepreneurial endeavor, there are three roles. There's the technician, there's the manager, and then there's like the CEO/visionary. And that when people get into entrepreneurship, it's usually because they're an amazing technician. They're really good at what they do, whether it's being a great chef, a great cook, a great food photographer, a candle maker, whatever. They're amazing at that. And then they realize, you know what? I'm so good at this. I could do this on my own. Not realizing that there's two other roles that need to be filled. And let's say they went through that phase and they realized, okay, I've got to actually make money and market this business and invoices and, you know, client correspondence. So they go into the manager role, which is the day-to-day operations. But I think the biggest mistake is they never make the transition to being like the CEO of their business. And so it's not that they can't be successful, you know, living in the latter two roles, but they'll probably stay at the level that they're at for a really long time until they're ready to move into, it's okay if I'm not the one in the kitchen every day or at all, because the goal is to build a business and not I'm a chef for hire. So that's probably the first, that's probably one of the biggest challenges that I see, is people realizing that if you're going to go down this journey, that it's a marathon and not a sprint. And you can't be on the stove, on the computer, and promoting your business all at the same time. Eventually, you're going to need to get some support. And if you want to stay the technician, that's totally okay. But then you're going to need to hire or outsource someone to manage the day-to-day operations or be the visionary for your company. So that's probably mistake number one. I think the second thing is trying to reinvent the wheel and not getting support. And I liken it to, you know, when we were in elementary school or high school or even college, if there was a test, if you asked somebody for the answers of the test, that was considered cheating. You'd fail. It was a bad thing. As an entrepreneur, that's called resourcefulness.
Yes. Right? Yes.
So I will pay you to tell me how to do this, or to show me, or to teach me, or to guide me, or to be an overseer. And for me, that was probably one of the hardest lessons. I did a lot of things through grit and grinding that were so unnecessary had I just gotten some support sooner in that particular area. So they get burnt out because they're just like, oh, I'm a great chef, but there's marketing, there's social media, there's pitching, there's media, there's invoices, contracts, there's policies. I mean, there's all these things, right? And it's like, yeah, you could have paid somebody to help you, you know, set that up or manage that or learn what that is. And then I think the third one is a lack of confidence. And you mentioned that. And I don't know if that can be taught. I think it can be encouraged, but I think you have to know that for what you do, you're the best and you're somebody's favorite chef. And somebody only wants what they want from you. And so you can charge what you want for that.
Yes. There's only one of you.
There's only one.
There's only one. Oh, those are some great, great tips. Thank you. Now, the final question is one that I ask everyone who's a guest on the show. And I'm tweaking it a little bit for you. We're going to make it a little different for you. So I want to know, what's the single most important element of an incredible high-end experience?
Connection. High-end experience, cooking class experience. I mean, and we've talked about this offline, the majority of my background was in cooking classes in person and online. And then I left that. And whether it was that, because I know that a large part of your audience wants to do their cooking classes, but even in a high-end culinary brand, you have to understand that what we do, we're not the grocery store where people are just going to shop because they're hungry. We are offering experiences that are not necessities, but are little luxuries or big luxuries. And so what people want is the memory.
Oh,
they want the experience.
Yeah.
And so what I teach my clients how to do is how to build that out in line with their personality and how to create connection. I think the reason why, you know, I've had the clients that I've had when I was more so of the technician and now being the consultant is that personal connection.
Absolutely. I love the example of the grocery store. That's such a good analogy. Sometimes students will ask me, I want to send the recipes for my class in advance, but I'm afraid if they have the recipe and the ingredient list, they will cancel the class. And I'm like, listen, if your experience is 100% based on them following that recipe that they could print out and do at home, like we have to work on your experience.
Yes.
And we know that it's not. We know that it's more than that. But sometimes we think of what we offer as a commodity. No, like, you know, I always talk about vegans. We have a lot of vegans in my program, but like your vegan Instant Pot class is not going to be the same as someone else's, even if you are cooking the same exact thing.
And absolutely.
And that's, I love your answer. I think connection is important no matter what you're doing, but that is really what you have to emphasize if you are going to charge a premium. It's a key part of the experience.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Evelyn, for joining us on today's show. We could have talked for 2 more hours. At least I have 2 more hours worth of questions for you.
Yes.
I'm sure our listeners do too. So if they want to learn more about you and your services, I'm sure many of them are going to want to work with you. Where is the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, they can find me at chefevelyn.com. All of my information is there. I'm on all social media networks, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is Chef Evelyn. And they can join my Chefpreneur Society. If they just go to chefevelyn.com/society, that puts them on my email list. You know, we get to talk via email and I send them videos and trainings and things like that.
That's great. As I mentioned earlier, when I discovered you online, I fell into your YouTube channel and just could not stop watching.
Yes.
So I highly recommend your YouTube videos to anyone listening here. Definitely check them out. She drops serious knowledge in each and every one of them. So thanks again. We'll definitely include the links that you mentioned in our show notes so that people can find you easily. Now, listeners, if you want to keep the conversation going, then I invite you to join me in the Experiential Table private Facebook group. It's where you'll find other culinary pros who are just as excited about topics like what we covered today and so much more. Finally, there's one small thing you can do to support this podcast in a very big way. And that's spread the word. If you could subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're tuning in, that would be so helpful in reaching more listeners like you. Thanks for tuning in. And until next week, get excited to get experiential.